Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
What was your first exposure to pornography, Mike?
My first exposure?
I love that. Amazing. For the benefit of people just listening, there's visuals to accompany Mike's article.
Oh, is this an audio thing?
It will be both, but yeah, audio, visual.
It's going to be visual too.
Yeah, yeah. I'll put this on YouTube, so you didn't get all dressed up for nothing. Don't you worry about that.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
It's for my benefit, though, no? And you've got the judge.
Yeah, but I should be sitting up. It makes me look fat this way.
Beautiful. Beautiful stuff. So go on, your first exposure to pornography. Put me in the picture.
My mom, she had magazines that were dirty. She had one magazine called Cocks and Cunts. And it was close-ups of cocks and cunts. Like, oh, fucking disgusting. Have you ever seen a genital up close?
No face, no body, just the members.
No, but have you ever seen a genital up front, like close?
I mean, yeah, it's not, especially ours. They're not the prettiest of things, are they?
Well, they're better looking than fucking vaginas. I'll tell you that. No. What I mean is they're all ugly. It's the worst part of the body.
That's so pretty hardcore. How old were you when you laid eyes on that?
No, I mean, I will. I like to be tied up and be suffocated by a pussy for like an hour or two. That's a good time. I like them. I'm not going to fucking sit there and jerk off to a picture of a vagina. I mean, I want to see a woman.
And you want imagination at play, right? I guess you're one of those guys.
I'm going to imagine that she's in a latex outfit. No, she will be in a latex outfit. I mean, I'm not going to fucking jerk off to a fallopian tube or of the labia minora or.
What I mean is you like to let your imagination run wild and bring into actuality your fantasy.
I want to see your cervix, baby. Let me jerk off to your cervix.
So how was your birthday? Tell me all about that.
No. My first pornography. No, Cocks and Cunts. That was what I saw. Mom, this magazine is disgusting. And she goes, well, you seem to like it because you have a boner. And I'm like, that's because you're rubbing my cock, Mom.
That's a very real conversation to have with your mother.
Well, she had a mirror above her bed, you know, and
we all know what that's
cool. Called. So she could watch me fuck her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Not with her eyes, but with the mirror.
Well, you need your eyes to look in the mirror. What are you fucking talking about, dude?
So you had a good birthday. You're just coming out of the birthday weekend.
Yeah.
It was a good time.
It was painful. It was a painful birthday.
Exactly the way you wanted it.
Yeah. I had Morat over here.
Did you really? How's he doing? Yeah. Is he good?
Yeah. He played me terrible music all night.
Sounds about right.
And his wife, Masumi Max. Yeah.
I've seen photos of her. Yeah, she's quite the specimen, isn't she?
Yeah, she kept saying she was going to hit me really hard with her hand. Known as a spanking in some circles. Mm-hmm. But it never really happened. But no, there were a lot of dominatrixes here. And some tough guys, some people in bands. It was a good birthday.
And what about, I know we're going back a little bit further, but New Year's Eve, I saw a picture with Doug Stanhope and you together. Is that how you rang in the new year with Doug?
Oh, yeah. Doug and Bingo. His wife, Bingo.
Uh-huh. I've never had the pleasure of meeting her. I've spent the day with Doug, but I bet she's
she had one,
a lot
she had
of fun.
One joke. She had to say one joke on stage, and she blew it. Yeah, Doug Stanhope is kind of my favorite comedian, and he mentors me.
Yeah, we spoke when he was on my show about you, and he had lots of lovely things to say. And for
he's
me,
he's awesome.
He is awesome, and I think for me, you're both cut from the same cloth, similar worldviews, similar approach to your art.
Well, you know what? It's true. We both seem like we're not politically correct, but we are. That's the magic sauce. It's just, it doesn't seem like we are, but we are.
Well, I think it's the way other people interpret you, right? They misconstrue the intent.
Yeah.
And what's that?
It's because we say things in a way that's funny and kind of awkward, and people don't like it.
No. Yeah. Sometimes.
Like when on stage, I'll say, all right, this next song is a black people song. It's not an African song. It's a reggae song. So it's a Jamaican black people song. And people are like, why is he saying, talking so weird? Well, it's a black person song from Jamaica. You can't say African-American. You really just got to say black person from Jamaica, because it's not a white person from Jamaica. You know,
and then you're going to eat the meat.
Yeah. And I don't know how else to explain the song. Like, you know, I was dating an African for, I don't know, 2 years. And people would say, oh, it's my African girlfriend. She's not African. Well, she's three generations living in South Africa. She's African. Yeah, but she's white. She's super white. All right. So what do you want to fucking say?
Semantics.
This is my white African girlfriend, you know.
Really throw him off.
It just, yeah, but I would have to say this is my white African girlfriend, which that sounds weird.
Yeah, then you're unnecessarily overcomplicating things, aren't you?
And she was my, you know, I'm in the BDSM world, mm-hmm. and she was my slave. So when I said this is my African slave, you know. It doesn't fly. You really have to explain it. But how else can I explain it? This is my white African slave. Oh, no, that doesn't work either.
And it's okay. It's a sex thing. And she signed up for it. It's consensual.
Well, it was consensual, but she did not sign. She didn't sign up for anything. And hey, we switched too. So I was.
Go on. You would occasionally become the submissive too. Do you like to interchange and work both lanes then? You don't have a personal preference?
I have a personal preference. I am a slutty submissive whore.
Oh, yeah. That is your
I don't charge. I don't charge. Just slut. I'm like a queer, submissive, respectful boy girl. The dominant sometimes, and I'm good, but it just doesn't give me the same boner, you know?
I hear you. When was the first time, do you think, that you were really exploring this stuff in your art, in your music, not just in the bedroom and in your life?
Well, when I wrote S&M Airlines, it was 1988, mm-hmm. and I was so scared. I had a girlfriend then, we went to a dull bookstore, and I could not go in. I could not go into the store. She had to go in and buy the bondage magazines. I was that scared. And S&M Airlines, the lyrics, I sang, I'll never fly S&M Airlines again, because I couldn't actually admit that, oh, I was going to fly that airline all the time.
Yeah. You're like, it's a one and done type deal, but actually you've just signed up for life. Yeah.
I was so ashamed. I was so embarrassed when I was in my later teens and 20s. And, you know, I didn't come out as a crossdresser until I was 46.
Who did you have mentoring you in that world? Did you have anyone?
Cross-dressing,
BDSM, that whole community.
Just me and my ex-wife, Erin. We started doing that when I was 19 and she was 18.
So you navigated those seas together and walked hand in hand through those early stages of it.
The first time she tied me up and whipped me was in our tour van. You know, everyone is at some party and we took the van to some parking lot. I don't remember. It was a grocery store parking lot. And she tied me up in the back of the van. She started riding crop. She used a riding crop on me. I was naked. Cops pulled up.
Of course.
And it was humiliation, not in the way I wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I also got 2 mosquito bites on my balls. Oh, fuck. That sucked. But that's when I started doing it. I mean, my girlfriend before that, I did it with her too. I've always done it.
I was going to say, it sounds like it's always been there.
It's what gives me a boner. I think when I'm with a naked woman, I kind of feel like I'm reading an issue of National Geographic. You know, it's just, naked, I don't get it. It's like, you know, well, it's not like this at all. But it's like a Christmas present without wrapping. But it's actually nothing like that, because you don't want to fuck a Christmas present with wrapping paper. But
that would be a very specific personal sexual preference.
Yeah, if I'm with a woman and she's wearing pink, you know, all the latex, I'm fucking, yeah, you know, let's do it. And when they take it off, I'm like, why did you do that? Why did you take off the latex? Now I got to figure out a different way to get a boner. It's just how it is.
Well, it's good to be creative, isn't it? And that's very much, you know, your area of expertise is creative thinking. So you can apply that in the workplace.
Well, yeah, when I was with Soma Snake Oil, mm-hmm, for 8 years, we never had a sexual experience that was the same. It was really... she was a master of ideas and not role play, because it was always us, but it was always something different. She always fucking scared me and threw me like, what the fuck is this? And that's how people's lives should be. They shouldn't be fucking each other once a month, once every 3 weeks. And when you do it, you shouldn't have to go through the moves that, you know, oh, she likes it when I touch her like this. Or I know it turns him on. I'll just blow him and he'll go to sleep. No, you got to do new shit all the time.
Well, without shoehorning in too much of a crass segue, Mike, a lot of bands I've witnessed in my lifetime, and I'm sure you have too, get to a certain stage in their career where they begin to phone it in and they go through the motions. Obviously, it's been announced that NOFX are going to start wrapping up the journey. Is any of that decision to get ahead of that and not become the band that begins to do things they've already done and get stuck in a routine? Well, like, when did the decision come and why?
There's a lot of reasons. I started thinking about it a couple years ago. And it's just, well, I think 40 years is a long fucking great career, and we could keep going, but I really want to say goodbye to all these cities that have been so wonderful to us and all these fans. And we haven't, like, NOFX has never tried that hard. You know, I try hard to have a great time on stage. That's why I get so loaded. But these last 40 cities we're playing, we're going to actually do something called rehearsing, where we learn our songs and hopefully play them well. And we've done two shows in Edmonton and Vancouver where we knew it was our last shows ever in those cities. And we really tried hard. You know, we didn't talk about it, but it's like, this is the last time we're ever playing the city. And people were like, you guys were so fucking good tonight. It was exciting. And both nights I couldn't say goodbye to the crowd. I was like, you know, thank you. So I just started bawling.
I saw some videos of this. You were down in the photo pit, weren't you? Across the rail, like shaking everyone's hand. And,
yeah. And it was just so special to shake everyone's hand and to thank them for all the years of coming to see us. I mean, I'm crying now.
It's special. I need
bookends. I need it to end. I'm tired of being an entertainer that way. I'm tired of being Fat Mike on stage and playing the same songs. That's why on this tour we're playing all different records and entertaining people and making them happy. That's great. But I'd rather tell people how to be happy for their lives and not just for one night. And I think I'm pretty good at that. It's weird. There's so many other things I want to do in life besides play the same fucking songs.
Yeah, and life's short, isn't it? And we only get a set amount of time and we have to use that time. Not just whilst we're here to do everything that we want to do, but I mean, are you someone who thinks about legacy and what you leave behind as a human, as an artist? Is that stuff important to you?
Of course. And I think as far as being in NoFX, I think we've left a wonderful legacy, but I'm spending every day working on the Punk Rock Museum now. And like so many hours a day talking to cool people and getting cool shit. And that's the real legacy is it's not NoFX. It's the Punk Rock Museum. It's incredible. And, you know, I'm in the Co-Defendants now in a band, a different style of music. And what's really making my brain super happy is my quartet album. Mm-hmm. Fat Mike Gets Strung Out. It's really...
I didn't know that's what it was called. Obviously, you sent it to me and I've been enjoying those songs. I didn't know that was what it was called. That's amazing. Of course it's called that.
Well, I was going to call it Fat Mike... It, not chamber music, but gas chamber music. But people are like, that'll bum people out. You know, you're Jewish and all.
Dude, one of the funniest onstage jokes I've ever seen you guys make was at Download one year, and you were doing this bit about how one of your granddads died in a Holocaust camp. And everyone's like,
it's a concentration camp, and Smelly's grandfather died.
Because he fell off the guard tower. Concentration
camp, and it was really sad. Well, he got really drunk and fell off a watchtower, and it was terrible.
So good. What did the Mexican get for Christmas was another one of my favorites as well. My bike.
Yeah, but we change those all the time.
Yeah, no, I have no doubt about that. There's no script there. But yeah, they were just ones that stand out for me.
What's cool about this last tour is that every show will be completely different. 40 different songs. We're going to play every song we've ever written. And, you know, we don't prepare what we're going to say. It's just going to be, I'm excited to play shows. I'm so excited to play these last shows because it's going to be really special. And we're not doing the Motley Crue Black Sabbath thing. On October 6th, 2024 in LA, that will be the last time NoFX ever plays. Absolutely.
You heard it.
I don't want people to think that we're doing a money grab. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we are going to we're going to make money on this tour. And
it's going to be a good payday, but it will be the last run.
It will be the last run. There's no fucking way I'm going to lie to people. And we decided to get back together again. That's not how I roll. I just don't. People don't think this of me, but my whole life is honor.
I know that. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of stuff I want to talk to you about. One of the things which intrigues me is, as you look back over the 40 years, as you prepare for these shows, as you're obviously selecting set records to play in their entirety, do you feel like there was a classic era for the band in terms of your own friendship and the energy in the camp?
Who the fuck is calling me? Hold on.
No worries.
Who's this?
Oh, nobody. Just an old friend.
Oh, what's up, Tally? It's Nubs.
She's Nubs.
Yeah, she's Nubs. I'm doing an interview right now with England.
Why did you answer?
Because I didn't recognize his number. I thought maybe you were the drug dealer.
I texted you my new U.S. number. You haven't saved it.
Oh, my God. I have to save everything from you?
Save it in my contact, please.
No.
Call me back?
Well, when I'm done with my interview.
Okay, save my number and call me on this number, please.
725.
That's my number.
Whoops.
Okay, later.
I'll beat that.
Yeah. That was Nubs.
Do you have, well, speaking of Nubs, you know, for me, two albums which I haven't seen in any of the posters that have been on my periphery, but War and Errorism and Pump Up the Volume. For me, those two are classic NoFX albums, and I haven't seen many, if any, of those records being played in their entireties at any of these shows.
Well, you know, we're coming back to Europe in 2024.
So you got to hold something
where we're going to do those albums, Heavy Petting Zoo.
It all makes sense.
I don't know, other records. And new ones, and Self-Entitled. Self-Entitled, I love that record.
Me too, it's a great album.
And I don't think we can play single album. It's too hard. No, the Big Drag is just so fucking hard.
Do you think there was a time in the band's history, though, where you were all at your happiest and best versions of yourselves? Because there's certain albums for me which are overridingly positive in terms of the tone, the sound, the message, everything. Then there's other albums which are obviously darker and a bit more sad and introspective. And that's the journey of any band that's been around as long as you guys have. Are you someone who looks back? Have you been looking back? And if you have, are there periods where you feel like, man, that was a good time to be in NoFX right there?
It's all been so good. Except for like COVID and more recently. That's why I wanted to do the last tour, because I wasn't happy just playing shows anywhere. But no, it wasn't like White Trash was interesting. Punkadrublic, we decided not to go with majors and not to make videos. And our career, everything just kind of kept going up, and it was just so fun and easy. And the best times is when I started doing cocaine, I think, which I don't know what year it was, but because I used to go on tour and I didn't party all throughout my 20s. I'd drink now and then. And then, so I would say the, Pump Up the Volume, War and Errorism, those years, they were the funnest.
I think you can hear that. You can hear it on the albums. And, you know, you have songs like the theme from an NoFX album, and you have Mattersville. And not only are all the songs positive sounding, but there's actually like songs about the camp, the crew, all of you, like, you know, being the best of friends, having the best.
Yeah, like theme, you know, and NoFX, we had kind of the most coveted crew. You know, our crew had been with us, most of them, for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people wanted to work for NoFX because we don't work that hard. And, you know, we don't switch guitars out. And it's just, it's one family. And how lucky we have been to be in this band with the same fucking members for 40 years. You know, we have manager and, you know, Jay Walker has been coming out and Rudely and getting to travel the world with your best friends. What a life. What a fortunate life.
It's very special, man. And when you took people behind the curtain with the Backstage Passport TV show, and we saw into that world, everybody wanted, not people in even the music industry, just regular people were like, damn, I want to be on the road to those guys. I want to be in that crew. Not even the band, like the crew.
Man. Yeah, if we could only show all the footage. You know what's rough in season two? It's like you have these guys filming you for years. Mm-hmm. They're gonna catch you on your worst night. And yeah, mine was Monterey, Mexico. Man, what an asshole I was. And I'm not like that.
Well, that's the nature of a reality TV show, isn't it? If you're gonna do it the way you real.
This was reality. You know, and the reason we didn't do season two on Fuse is because they said, well, this time we'll send producers with you and they're going to make all kinds of crazy shit happen. But we didn't make shit happen. It just happened. It takes a long time because a lot of places are just boring. But we made nothing happen.
Another thing I've been thinking is like something you guys did since the beginning, which got me excited about you, is pre-internet when you couldn't find out anything about bands and you wouldn't do interviews. You'd pick up your albums, you'd read the book sleeves, and you wouldn't even really know half the time what NoFX looked like, who they were, because you'd fuck with people so much.
Yeah, we didn't do interviews for 8 years, and we didn't really put our photos on albums.
Yeah, it was genius, because there was a mystique around the band that I remember since the day I discovered your band up until the kind of George Bush campaign when you started talking in the press, and I got to see you
only
live
because,
the first time.
Only for political reasons.
Yeah.
Because, oh, shit, we haven't done interviews in 8 years. Now is a good time to. And that was the beginning of me becoming hated.
You mentioned this to me last time we spoke. Yeah. And it's funny, isn't it?
When Vice magazine gave Warren Arism a 0 out of 10 and said, Fat Mike, why don't you stay at the kids' table? And like, well, I went to fucking college and I had a degree in social science and I took political science and I'm not a fucking idiot. But no one wanted to hear NoFX talk politics. And that was the beginning. And still, I think it's very interesting how unliked I am by so many people, because I don't know. It's because I speak my mind. It's because I live the life I want to live. And I'm happy and successful, and people don't like that.
Yeah, and I think when you're a public figure and you're actually honest, people don't like that either, because they can't handle the truth without throwing a cliched saying out there. I think it's true. I think the people that do the best are the people that, you know, button their lips and give people 10% of who they are, not 90% in your case.
Yeah, you don't know what Greg Graffin does, or Ken Casey, or Dave from Floggy Molly. You don't know their lives. I'm just so open about mine. And I do that because like when I was vegetarian for 12 years, I told people that because I think it's the moral way to live. And living your life, don't dream it, be it. Living your life happy and living out all your fantasies. And you got to be a role model for that. You know, you got to get your freak on. If you're not getting weird, you're weird. And living a normal life is fucking insane. So I do speak out. And yeah, we've had private conversations about all kinds of stuff. And I love talking to people. That's what I want to do more. is, you know,
connect,
talk to people, connect with people, and show people that happiness is your passion. It ain't your fucking job. And it's right there. You just have to figure out what your fucking passion is.
Well, one thing that I think, I hope you know, and I have no doubt that this run of shows will reinforce, is that NoFX isn't just a band, you know, with the label alongside it. What you guys have, and you in particular leading it, have always done is shown people that you don't need to play the game, that you don't need to use the phrase to sell out. You can make it on your own terms. You can have integrity and success at the same time. And it's quite amazing to me. Was there ever any doubt in your mind as to whether or not you would or wouldn't make it? Or did you just know that it felt good and it just kept growing naturally? Because
we never thought we were going to make it. Are you kidding me? Have you heard our early albums?
I certainly have.
Yeah,
shut
yeah.
Shut up already.
We are the most improved band, for sure.
Yeah.
Idiot. In my house, when someone sneezes, you say, idiot. And then you have to say, thanks. Thank you. It's funny. It's way better than bless you.
It's way better than bless you, I was going to say.
Yeah. Idiot. I believe you're supposed to say thank you. Okay.
There you go. Bless you. But you've done it on your own terms. Every step of the way. There's so much to be said for that. That's inspirational.
There's
that
so much to be said. Yeah, but it's like, it worked for us. You know, when Green Day went to Major and Rancid for a little while and Bad Religion and Rise Against Me.
Everyone else, basically.
No, just a lot of bands did. And I never said anything. I'm like, yeah, that's your path. You know, and a lot of them did really good on majors. Some didn't, came back to indies. Doesn't matter. I think a sellout band is a band that changes their sound to fit in with popular music. Like the Rolling Stones. Sellout band. Have you heard Emotional Rescue? Mm-hmm. They made a fucking disco album.
Kiss, both great rock and roll bands, but yeah, they jump on the bandwagon.
Sellouts.
And they're still selling out arenas.
You know, well, whatever. Green Day never changed their sound.
Everybody else just realized it was good and jumped on board.
Yeah, the world finally realized that punk rock is better than all other styles of music.
There you go.
Lyrics are better. The melodies are better. The message is better. We're nicer. I mean, who do you want to hang out with? Fucking NoFX or Slayer?
It's no contest.
No. No one wants to hang out with Kerry King. Dave Lombardo, maybe. But
I very much operate in both worlds and have encountered
Kerry King.
Experienced.
Not fun.
Not a nice guy, by all accounts. I've never met him, but yeah, by all accounts.
Well, if you lost your hairline that early.
Here's one thing, though, that definitely doing it your way, and you can hopefully shed some light on this. You know, when you're singing about dinosaurs dying out in the late 90s, before the advent of streaming services and the decline of the music industry, you're predicting that coming.
Idiot!
But so many bands, when the industry collapsed, began to panic, and they're like, you know, it ain't what it used to be. But for you guys, I guess, did anything change? Did you notice a change? Obviously, you saw the sea change.
It all changed. You know, Fat Records had 18 employees. We went down to 5. Being a songwriter, it's just way harder to make money. And also being a band member, all the money you make is playing live shows. And it really separated the mediocre bands from the good bands, because you have to survive on the road. And I think if you're an innovator or your band is really good, you did okay. Where in the 90s, fucking everybody did good, because there were so many CDs selling. But you really have to impress a crowd. And I like to think you have to make the crowd feel like they know you, which is, you know, like us and Frank Turner, they do that. What do you mean they do that? I'm talking It's me. I can't say they. We do that. Where, you know, Nirvana, they'd play a whole fucking show and Kurt Cobain would say, thank you, one time. You didn't feel like you knew him. Lyrically, you did. And, you know, that's why he's dead.
Well, here's another point. There's that old phrase, right?
That made no sense.
You either die a hero or live long enough to become the villain. Do you think any of that has been at play in your story, in the No Effect story?
For me, yeah. You know, I don't know. I've been villainized. Don't know why. But, you know, can't complain. The mantra that gets me through life is you win some, you lose some. And you really, when something bad happens to you or someone fucks you over, yeah, that happened. I just learned a lesson. But if you get upset or angry or take revenge on someone, you're a fucking moron. You can't win them all. And getting upset when someone screws you over, just don't hang out with that person anymore.
When you're writing a song like Don't Count On Me, do you take that Hefe part included? It's 30 years, I'm still the new guy. Do you go to the rest of the guys and be like, this is what we're doing, and what's their response? Because
no.
How does a song like that go from an idea in your head?
These are the words. Sing it. I mean, yeah, we don't write songs by committee.
That's a very specific message you're sending out there, though, isn't it? Which is basically, I'm going to have the last laugh here.
Yeah. Well, you know, like any good joke or any good song, not any good song, but you want to misdirect people. Any good magic trick, it's misdirection. And that's what I live for, is playing stuff that chords and lyrics and whatever that people don't expect. And I think our last album, on double album, we did that a lot.
Mm-hmm. What's coming up then? You told me that have you finished? Like, there's going to be another No Effect record, right? Even though touring's winding down. What will go on with releases? Will there be one more album then done? Will there be intermittent?
Well, we're almost done with our next album. It's called Everybody Else Is Insane.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the one we did in the studio where people paid to watch us record. And yeah, those songs are done. And it's, you know, that's kind of our last studio album. Although we have two more records coming out after that. But those are songs I've been saving. No Effects A to Z. And they're cool albums, but I just, for the past 10 years, I've been making sure we have songs starting with every letter of the alphabet.
Amazing. And so that's what it'll be, is 26 songs, one for every letter.
Two different ones, yeah. But a lot of them are unreleased.
Amazing.
Or demo versions. And yeah, you think I wrote a song called Xmas Has Been X'd for no reason? Zyklon B Bathhouse? Nah. I've been thinking for a long time.
Did you ever release Idiot Son of an Asshole? That was one of my favorite ever songs by you guys.
And well, you have bad taste in music.
It was a moment in time. It captured the zeitgeist. It sent up a very evil man in a very funny way. And I thought it was a brilliant statement and just a great fun swipe.
We have a lot of songs that we've never recorded. I like that.
I like that too.
And on our last tour, I plan on writing a new song for, there will be one unreleased song in every city.
Are you still going to do, I'm going to try and skirt around this so I don't give it away, but you played me a song in your hotel room before Slam Dunk, and you had this idea for an album. It involved the Skints. Is that still going to happen?
Oh, that's it's already happened, dude.
It's happening.
They're all out there.
They're all out there already. Yes.
already.
How many songs are we talking? 10?
14.
Wow. So they're all out there in the world. Fucking hell. So I thought you'd just done that one and then you'd kind of let the idea by, you know,
because
the
how would you fucking know what Italian band is doing one or what Japanese band? You would never fucking know. And no one's going to know.
When are you going to? I guess you can't say when you're going to drop it because then that's the.
And
that's
none
the
of the bands know who the other bands are.
Amazing. Wow. So it is like that. It's like you don't know, they don't know. That's fucking amazing.
No one's going to know. No one's
Nobody's
gonna
done
know.
That before. That is a first. That is a world first.
Well, it's just so weird. And people are listening going, what the fuck are they talking about?
Amazing, dude. Tell me about the co-defendants. I watched the video you sent me through and it is tough as fuck. And Sam, he seems to be someone who's, you know, an important figure in your life, doing the podcast with him, doing this project with him. I listened to that last Get Dead record a lot over the pandemic time as well. And he's the real deal.
He lives with me and I've never met anyone like him. I love him so much. He's just untamable. You just never know what's going to happen with him. But he's a man of honor and grace. And what a fucking writer and what a human being. And the co-defendants. I've never been so proud of producing an album.
It's got a huge sound. It reminds me with its tone of a lot of the kind of UK grime and ska that was around in the sort of mid-noughties that was tough and street and urban and had that inflection to it. Real life stories about struggle and grit. And
it's all, yeah, it's all true too. All the stories and I'm just so happy. And you know, well, tomorrow the video comes out, Bad Business. And I expect you, Matt, to tell all your friends to watch
I will.
It.
And it's an amazing video. It's fucking brutal.
But you have to watch the first videos first.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've seen the first two. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we're editing the fourth one right now. And the fifth one is you gotta know what happens, right? You have to know what happens after Bad Business.
I think any kind of storyline that runs through not just the sound and the music, but the visuals and the whole presentation of the product is a kind of a rare dying thing, isn't it?
I don't think anyone's done five videos that are one story.
No. Again.
It's fun. It's fun writing them. It's hard.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Costume change.
So good. Just drinking you in, Mike. That's such an amazing look. Are you still doing your own line of clothing for men that like to wear ladies'
clothes?
Yes.
Yes. Fatale. Fatale. Fatale Designs. Men's panties that are supposed to be attractive to women.
You must have had a lot of people in the, maybe the punk scene, maybe just, you know, in strange scenes that have come out of the woodwork, but have you had a lot of encounters with people, men, who said, thank you so much for showing me that this is okay, for giving me the confidence to do this. You've changed my life. Do you get a bit of that?
Yeah. And nothing makes me happier. That's why I want to spend more of my life doing that. Not entertaining people for one night, but changing their lives. Yeah. Every time someone says that, it makes me cry.
It's a special thing. How else do we...
But there's like serious thought behind a lot of that too. Feminizing men, women who feminize their man or let them be feminine, it just makes the world a better place. Because men are not allowed to be feminine. They're not allowed to give up. They're not allowed to cry. They're not allowed to be sexy. They're not allowed to be submissive. And that's why every fucking war started, and just men trying to be a man. Ugh, gross. You know, what a terrible place to be in, to have to be a man all the time.
What about the phrase, which is very popular these days? I wonder if you could unpack it for me and give me your thoughts on it. Toxic masculinity.
Toxic what?
Masculinity.
I don't really know what that means, but that's what I'm talking about. Being feminine, I mean, I identify as a boy girl. I mean, I'm really like a grandpa, grandma, but but I say boy girl.
Let's not be ageist here.
And it's so nice to be with a woman, and you get to be sweet. And, you know, I change. My whole personality changes. And women are less scared of you, because so many women are scared of men, as they should be, because men are such jerks. And really, the best thing for the world is for women to let their men and encourage them to be feminine. It's problem is a lot of women don't want feminine men. And it's not just on women, you know, men, we have to be a lot fucking sweeter to women. Basically, this is the deal. You got to take turns once a week. Okay. This.
True equality.
The best advice. On Wednesday night, you have a date night. And what the man does is does whatever his woman wants. Sexually, specifically. If I can lick her pussy, make her come, do that lesbian thing with the... And whatever... But there's no reciprocation. You give her an hour of whatever she wants, massage, whatever. But you don't have, there's no reciprocation. She doesn't have to give you anything back. Because that's what sex turns into. It's like, oh, if I do this, then I'm going to have to do this. And I'm going to have to do this. And then next week, she takes care of you. In my case, it'd be like, shove something big in my ass and tie me up with tape, hurt me, and, you know, maybe blow me. Where a blowjob where you can't say, are you almost finished? Because, you know, that just ruins it, right? But no reciprocation. And it frees you to, oh, my God, I get to be with my partner and I don't have to perform. I just get to enjoy them.
Puts you in the moment, doesn't it?
Yeah, and pleasing your partner. I'm pleasing my partner is so special. And it's like giving gifts, you know, at Christmas. No one likes to get them. It's fun to give people a gift. And it puts you in the moment. I'm going to please this woman as much as I can for the next hour, 2 hours. And yeah, it's like meditation almost. I'm going to concentrate on this woman. And it takes off all that performance anxiety. And are we going to come at the same time and all that shit? I mean, that's cool too. But yeah, I came up with this like a year ago, and me and my lady, we're not together anymore. We did that, and it's fucking great. She'd be like, okay, get dressed up like a slut, come into the bedroom, and lick me until I come two or three times, and then get the fuck out of here.
Yes, ma'am. You know what, though? It doesn't just apply to sex. I think what you hit on something really interesting there is this whole idea that doing nice things for people, they get to receive something nice, and you get the feeling of doing something nice for someone, which is a positive, joyful feeling. So everybody wins, and it's a really empowering practice that can have a ripple effect.
There's two kinds of people in this world: people that give and people that take. And we've been trained to learn that taking is okay. It's business. That's what you do. It's never okay. But I think it is more important in sex, because everyone thinks they have to perform and they want to be good. And it makes it so you have sex less often. It makes it so you want to just jerk off because it's easier. And, you know, both partners, you have to let your fucking partner jerk off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You should be allowed to say, I'm going to the other room, jerking off. All right. But what about me? It's not about you tonight, right? This is my fucking night. I am having a date with my fucking cock. Right? Fucking cheap date.
As someone who's obviously not uncomfortable talking about anything, how do conversations with your daughter go in regards to things like this? Do you have the same amount of honesty with her, or is it a bit more difficult?
She tells me everything. She's in college now, and it's hard. She told me something the other day that totally tripped me out, because my ex-wife, Soma Snake Oil, is a porn star. And, you know, we told Darla that she's an adult model, not a porn whore. That word I use because that's the word Soma uses, because she wasn't a porn star. She did porn. She said porn whore. She's a sex worker. And I respect all sex workers. Anyway, Darla said, you know, Dad, all my friends at school saw Soma. They all saw her porn. And I'm like, oh my God, you never told me that. She's like, well, I didn't really want to say anything. But everyone I knew was like, your stepmom did that? And I got to say, Soma, she did porn. She was proud of it. And she put her daughter through private school doing it, and fuck yeah, you know. And I've been on kind of going on a rant, because I'm in Vegas and I meet a lot of sex workers, strippers, escorts, porn stars, doms, and I fucking can't stand how they look down on each other. Like, well, at least I'm not doing that. I'm a stripper, I'm not a fucking escort. What the fuck, why are you looking down on someone? All these women are bringing joy to the world. They are bringing happiness, just like I do. You know, I'm on stage singing songs that I don't really feel like playing, to bring happiness to the world. just like nurses or chefs, you know, a wait staff, whatever it is, we're bringing joy to people. We're all fucking whores. You don't look down on anybody. And when I was doing this abortion rights rally, right, I'm singing these songs. I wrote a song, USA holes, stay the fuck out of our holes. It was pretty catchy. Anyway, and this organization, this pro-abortion rights organization, we're anti-sex worker. And are you serious? Well, yeah, I mean, that women are being exploited. I thought you just said that it's a woman's right to do whatever she wants to with her body. Well, that's different. They're being exploited. Fuck you. In college, I knew two strippers that went through college and bought houses. Mm-hmm. Who the fuck are you to judge? You know, my ex, she put her fucking daughter through private school. You're going to judge her because she fucking sucks cock or fucks a guy or beats up a guy? I mean, women, feminists, they can't fucking agree on shit. If you're going to be a feminist, stand up for fucking women, for their rights to do whatever the fuck they want to do. You know who is really selling their body? Football players, fucking coal miners. You know, they are selling their body. They are losing their minds and their lungs. Sex workers, they just make people happy. Get the fuck off their backs.
Yeah.
Or that sounded funny. stay on their backs. You know what? Come the fuck on their backs and pay them well for that.
Hypocrisy is the worst thing. And I've always enjoyed the fact that you've gone after that in your music and in, you know, in life and conversations. It's important.
Last year I was called out for being a homophobe.
Man that's had the rainbow flag on fucking stage for 20 years.
And look at me. I'm fucking queer. Oh, you did this Fat Records gay flag. You're profiteering. We sold like 80 of them. And I'm the president of the company. And sorry, but I'm part of the LGBTQ community. I'm the Q. Not the G.
Have you seen...
Not there's anything wrong with that. But...
So, Mike, I am 30 years late to the party, but I've just started watching Seinfeld recently, literally in the last couple of months. And I got to the outing episode the other night. And obviously that phrase comes up throughout the episode.
Yeah, there's anything wrong.
And that's when the penny finally dropped. I was like, oh, at the end of Linoleum, when you say the thing that bums me out the most is, you know, her and all her friends know that I drank pee. Not that there's anything wrong with that. And I was like, oh! That's where that came from.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm a Q. I'm a queer. Like, tell me if I'm queer. I have fucked a trans dom that has a man-made pussy. Like, in that song.
Mm-hmm. $1,000. Is it a million? How
$100,000. $100,000. Yeah. I went there. Don't I get included in the club now?
You're in the club, right? Do the club accept you in the club?
I don't know. There's really no, there's no exam. There's no place to go. You just have to kind of identify. And, you know, I was born visible. And now I identify as invisible. I'm transparent. My pronouns are who and where.
That's a good joke. That's watertight.
Well, I'm doing stand-up now. And speaking of that, all you they and thems out there, okay, it's fine. It's very confusing. I slept with them last night. Ooh, really? You had an orgy? No, I just slept with them. Well, how many were there? It was just them. It's fucking vague. So everyone who's listening, go with the new word, per. per, for person. I slept with per last night.
Or just find their name out and refer to them by name, right?
No, per. This is important. I love per. I slept with per last night. Oh, just one person? Yeah, it was just per. Per's great. Per, for person. It's non-binary.
All-inclusive, but as you say, it's a singular entity.
I am a person. I am not a plural.
It's very confusing.
There's only one of me. But if you have split personality, you can be plural. But come on, people. Enough of the they, them. Her. But you can identify any way you want to.
When are you and Doug going out on the road together then?
As Doug says, you need a lot of work, kid.
Does he?
Oh, yeah.
He's honest with you then.
Oh, yeah. He said he kind of liked one of my jokes.
Have you performed in front of him as a stand-up? Have you done that?
No, but I sent him the video because I've done like four things. I did well, but I mean, he's Doug Stanhope.
Were you doing it to just a comedy crowd, to a music crowd, friends? What was the context?
I've done some open mics, and what I found out is I'm too dirty.
Well, the language is too blue, or just the content is too blue?
You kind of have to have people relate to what you're saying. So when I say, are there any cesareans out there? Oh, I'm a cesarean too. How did you find out you were a cesarean? Did your mom tell you? My mom didn't tell me. But one night when we were spooning, I said, Mom, am I a cesarean? Why do you ask, honey? Well, because your pussy is so tight, Mom. I figured I came out another hole or another way. And apparently
that's,
it's too dirty for
joke,
people.
But it's out there, right?
Right. And I can't stop with those jokes. I think they're funny, but people are like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. You should see my band play. Wait to hear what I say about country fans.
And you were doing that on the Wolves record, apart excluding country or musicians. It was there from then.
Yeah. And look at me and my daughter. Who's wearing a cowboy hat? That's me.
There's some lovely photos on that wall, Mike. Really nice.
Well, I made my family photos big. That's my mom and dad. Fucking prick and whore. There's my granddad. He made racist films.
Actually.
Well, he produced and directed some Charlie Chan movies.
Right.
Which could be, at the time, they weren't racist. Look at my grandparents over there. Ooh. There's a man on a horse. My grandma. And see this Asian lady?
Mm-hmm.
You know who that is?
No.
I don't either. I just bought that photo at a store and I thought it would look good on my wall of family photos. You know, I want to be inclusive.
Is family important to you, Mike? Is it something that's defined you?
Oh, that's a good question. Because family is a... I long for family. I wish I had family. I try to build my chosen family, like Sam, Sharky. That's a terrible question.
Well, it's never too late, is it? It's never too late to make these bonds and these connections with, you know, chosen family members, as you say, or...
No, like what I sing in one of my newer songs is, what a shame that shaman told me I'd always be alone. Because I've never been so lonesome after that. And that's kind of how I see myself, always being alone. I'm much happier when I write a new melody. I'm happiest when it's just my songs in me.
I get it. I get it. Do you think you're going to be all right not being on tour? Do you think you're going to settle into a new pace of life? Because obviously there's another lyric where you say, "As you know, as long as I'm in no effects or having bonded sex, I seem to function." You take away one of those things.
No, I have so many other things I'm so excited about doing. And, you know, Home Sweet Home, I'm going to make the movie this year. And I can't write more no effects songs. I've written enough. I'm writing for other people. I want to keep writing songs.
You're an amazing writer, man. You're an amazing writer.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I saw Beatles Love, the show, last night for the 7th time. I took leave from Snuff Friday.
I love him so much. Is he still out there?
No. But he's gone back. I took him and his lovely wife, Kath, to Love. I just took Johnny from Old Man Markley last night. Mm-hmm. I went like twice in a week. And it's just like, it's just so inspiring. My message to anyone out there, if you're in a band and you want to get popular, and no one does this, because I've told so many bands this, just learn how to play Beatles songs. Not Let It Be, all of them. Do what they did in Hamburg for 2 years, is master their craft of chords, progressions, and later.
I'm a chef here, aren't you?
Oh, Sharky's leaving. It's really sad.
Bye, Sharky.
Later, dudes.
Everybody thinks their songs are great. Oh, I just wrote this good song. Fuck you. Learn from the greatest band of all time. I've never taken my advice either.
I love that you acknowledge them, though. I love that you acknowledge them, because so many, you know, people who consider themselves punk would be like, fuck the Beatles, you know, whatever. But they are the band that invented popular music, like the pop band.
And they were so political too. Very political and funny. There's Stones fans, and you know what? Go fuck yourself. I made a CD of the greatest Stones hits that I like. It's 5 songs.
Which 5? Which 5 are going in there?
Street Fighting Man, mm-hmm. Angie.
Gimme Shelter?
No. Oh my god, Wild Horses on it. Under My Thumb, but only because Social D did it. No, the Stones, they're a band that makes you feel good. People like them because
they make you shake your hips.
Some people like music because it makes them feel good. Well, fuck them. I like songs because they change your life.
Yeah, they make you think,
like Bowie and Billie Eilish and Snuff.
Love those guys so
like
much.
Bands that have made perfect albums. There's not very many of them.
Who have been some unlikely sources of inspiration for you, as not just songwriters, but, you know, humanitarians, artists?
RBG. Ruth Ginsburg. I know. You wouldn't know her. She's a woman.
What's that supposed to mean, Mike?
Dr. Susie. She's in sex. We went to the same college. She wrote a book about bonobos. Brilliant book about the bonobo apes. They're the only matriarchal society in the world.
Wow.
So cool. It's fucking apes, the females, when men get in fights, they break it up and like blow them.
You know? Really? Straight up?
Yeah, like,
and you know how to shut this down.
And they have sons and daughters, and they teach them how to fucking give oral sex. Like, this is what you do when a man's grumpy. And all the females just hang out and fucking lick cunt all day. Fuck you, man. Then they run everything. The chicks run everything because women should run everything. You know, it just makes sense. And, you know, the all the pages that were taken out of the Bible about God and his mother. I mean, non-existent God was birthed by non-existent godmother.
And they took her part out.
That's where non-existing Jesus came from. And all the non-existent people that make this world such a fun place. Marvelous.
Final segue of the chat. Speaking of women, you mentioned to me the other day that the majority of your team helping you out with the museum are of the female species. That for you, is that going to be your focus for the time being? And how important is it for you to nail it with that thing and give people the one fucking, you know, place on earth that's going to house all of this history?
I hired a lot of women because the women I hired are so fucking competent. And I just kind of think women do a better job than men. I think they try harder, and there's not enough women leaders in punk rock. So the punk rock museum is fucking run by women. And it's not for a particular reason. I just think they do a better job.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I was opening up this punk store, and Lisa Brownlee from the Warped Tour, who I've known for 25 years, she was like, we should get some artifacts in here, some old punk rock shit. It'd be really cool. And I was like, damn, that's a good idea. Instead of this 1,000 square foot place, now it's a 12,000 square foot place. So, you know, she was the first person to come up with the idea of let's get artifacts. Let's get cool old punk shit. And I fucking ran with it. But, you know, It's funny because I did an interview in Spin, and I told Spin, you have to talk about Lisa Brownlee because me and her started this. And they didn't put her in. They put Fletcher from Pennywise and Vinny from Lesson Jake and me and Brian Ray Turcotte, and they left her out when I specifically said, and that's... I was so fucking pissed.
That's because standard journalistic bullshit move.
Yeah. She fucking ran the Warped Tour for 25 years. She's a wonderful woman.
I love Lisa.
She's a woman. She's not a singer of her band. Let's leave her out. And I told them, you have to put Lisa in. No. But that's how the world works, right? But hopefully we can change it.
And I'm excited for everything you've got planned. I was actually with Fletcher last night. I went to see Pennywise play, and he was chatting to me about, you know, just the kind of amazing ideas that you've been talking about bringing to life. And
this museum is magic. And Fletcher is a big part of it because it's our museum. We're doing what the fuck we want. You know, like, you can't do that. What are you fucking talking about? We're going to do whatever the fuck we want. But what if it breaks? Well, then we fix it. What if people spill beer on it? I don't think Darby Crash will mind.
Right. The ghost of Darby.
I just got, look at this. But I just got. Oh. Look at, oh. For what records? Pat Smear's first royalty check for the Germ 7-inch for $8.
$8.34, mind.
Well, that is correct. Charlotte Caffey's first royalty check for $15 when she was in the Eyes before the Go-Go's. DJ Bonebreak, his first check. This is fucking cool. This is the shit we're putting in the Punk Rock Museum.
I was chatting to Fletcher about this last night. I'm amazed that these things are still out there, that people have protected them and kept them, and
I talked to so many people. Brian from the Nightbirds, he just saw Nathan from the Teen Idols, you know, Ian McKay's first band. Uh-huh. And he drove down to his house and he had everything. We have a bus ticket from Ian McKay from his Greyhound from DC to LA. Yeah. It says Ian McKay on it. I mean, it sounds weird, but I love this shit.
Well, things like that as well are actual signposts of the history of this movement and music as well. Like, there's a few key players and a few key moments that do signal the evolution of it all.
Yeah, but Pat Smear, his first royalty check, he went from the Germs to Vagina Dentata to Celebrity Skin to, maybe not that bad, to Nirvana to Foo Fighters, quit Foo Fighters, came back, and what a rad dude.
What a rad dude. What a rad journey as well. And, you know, so much loss, and for him to still be as lovely as he is.
He's so fucking cool. Him and Joan Jett, they're the best. The best.
Yeah. Real. Real motherfuckers.
All right. So.
I love you, Mike. And it's always a pleasure chatting. And thank you for everything.
Love you too, Matt. And this is a good one, I think.
I'm happy you're happy. And I can't wait.
I had a few shots before I started this interview. I think I'm slurring.
No, you're not slurring at all. Not at all.
All right. I've looked cuter.
That's for sure. What are you up to tonight?
What do you think?
You're going to get tied up, spanked, and have a good time.
No, actually, tonight I'm going to hold my position.
Right.
No ropes. I have to hold my position while I get hit with this fucking crop that has little spikes on it, little needles. So it like opens your ass and then you get caned. So it's going to get bloody. And maybe if I'm lucky, I'll get a big cock in my ass afterwards.
There you go. All in a day's work.
But I'm just kidding. I don't do that kind of thing.
I'm just hanging out, drinking Liquid Death, watching movies.
I do.
Having vanilla sex, missionary.
I do have to hold position tonight, I was told. And it's harder. Getting tied up and beat, that's easy.
I have absolute faith in you, Mike.
Fucking professional. What are you fucking talking about? Thank you. Take care, Matt.
Friends. Yeah, you take care too,
and you got to write something for the museum.
Whenever you're in need or just feeling down.